This
double podcast
is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Let me cop. So now I'm speeding and trying to drive away from the fact that she was right. So I triple left trying to double back. The streets are filled with some clues like how I ain't noticed that. Fuck it, I see some familiar stuck in the cul-de-sac. I pull up, get out, what up? I want to help, but what you want for some? Some niggas really don't want for themselves. Now do I stay, do I go? That's my dilemma. And traffic is picking up. If I don't leave, I'ma get stuck. So I speed off. We talk barely, and it seems awkward. And I heard through some words that you off it. I got too much drive, don't wanna steer off path and crash and get distracted.
But all right, we're here with another quick pod blast again from the dead. Me, Timothy Robert Buckner from Lucha Undead, and This Week in Wrestling, and I'm joined by Quentin Moody from Psychology Is Dead. Quentin, how you doing tonight?
I like the fact that we actually have a solid duo name going.
I like it. I'm enjoying it, right? It's kind of cool. It's nice to have a side project. So, in sticking with the kind of a running theme on these pod blasts for me and you, covering stuff that's not covered as much, specifically kind of the Attack Pro, Fight Club Pro family of wrestling promotions, we're going to do a quick catch-up because we were a little bit behind, both of us, on Attack. We watched Fun the Police from July 7th. And Neon Wrist Lock from July 16th. So the shows are within 9 days of each other. A new show just came out, the Damplified show, that's actually a mock on the fact that they were supposed to perform at the Amplified Fest. They got rained out, so hence Damplified.
And on 24 hours notice, they ran a completely different show on a new venue.
Yeah, right? Or was it a new venue? Or a different venue? It was at the Frog and Fiddle, which is where Fun the Police happened, which is... Yeah. I don't know. Attack runs a lot of different venues. Which venues do you prefer?
I think I might say the Frog and Fiddle because I like how tight the space is, and I like Attack is a really it's a lot of fun, but I think it's a real intimate promotion too. And I think the Frog and Fiddle really amplifies, no pun intended, that atmosphere that Attack, I think, brings.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that for Attack shows, the space that I've liked the most is the Frog and Fiddle. It's funny because it looks so much different now than even it just did a couple years ago, just from the way that they're shooting. A lot of their shows before seemed to be a single cam, so you don't really get the look of the whole building. But now, because they have a floor camera, and because of the lighting and kind of everything, I actually, when we're watching Fun the Police, I noticed the kind of exposed beams in the ceiling. I had never really noticed that before, and I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool little building, but you're right. The ring is right up against a wall on one side. So it's like you can't even hit the ropes. You can't go on the apron or else you're up on a brick wall, which actually does happen during one match here. But I guess let's just get into it, and then we'll do overall thoughts and everything at the end. Now, for me, I watched both these shows pretty much back-to-back over the course of less than 24 hours, with also watching the Good Wrestling Back for Good show in between. So I saw a lot of the same guys doing a lot of the same stuff over the course of it. That said, I still really appreciated it. How about you? Did you have kind of a similar experience?
Yeah, I actually watched Press Start, Fun the Police, and Neon Wrist Lock all in the same day because it was like in the time between G1 where there wasn't a show the next morning or the day before. So I was able to squeeze in some other wrestling.
God, we sound like psychopaths. We really do.
I know.
So they, interestingly enough, they open up with two guys who I think not on Press Start, but actually there was a show in between, wasn't there, between Press Start? Maybe it was Soundrock.
Wasn't it Club 100?
But I actually didn't even end up seeing that. I'm trying to think, because these two guys just faced off against each other. Maybe it was at Press Start. No, you know what? It was probably on a Fight Club show that I'm getting mixed up with. But these guys have just recently had a couple matches against each other with Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, both Australian guys. Kyle Fletcher's actually been in Attack for a while at this point, and he's kind of just starting out in Fight Club Pro as well. Mark Davis is newer to the UK scene, possibly, or at least newer to the Attack scene. And they're going up against a team that I kind of feel bad because I think that they were the flavor of the month team for a little while. They got super popular super quick, and now it seems like they're already being phased down in Bolarama. Did you get a similar vibe there? It seems like Attack has an act that gets really hot, especially in the tag division. It was CCK a little while ago. obviously they've moved on to being hot other places. Bolarama comes up, they're hot for a little while, and then now it seems like Kyle Fletcher, Mark Davis is the new kind of thing. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I like Bolarama, but I would say that maybe they aren't as accessible, or maybe their gimmick wouldn't work as much in other places. I'm not sure if they work under different characters in different promotions in a sort of Chikara-y way. But Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, they're coming in from Australia, and that scene in particular, as we touched on when we did the MCW show, is starting to pick up steam. So I can see why Fletcher and Davis are starting to get more of the push as opposed to guys that were already Attack Pro originals.
Yeah, and I think I definitely like this match. I think that I think Bolarama's underappreciated for how good of workers they actually are because of they're so gimmicky. Yeah. They kind of, in some ways, it's funny because they do more. What is it? More bull for your buck or whatever. And it is kind of a nod to the Young Bucks, but they really are a very similar to the Young Buck act in that is that they can be really funny. They can be really sticky, but they also have a lot of cool high spots, double teams. Kyle Fletcher, Mark Davis here, same thing, honestly, but a little bit more toned down with the character work. Crowd got super behind it. I enjoyed the match, but for this being the opening match and then setting up for what happens on the next show is kind of interesting for me because realistically nobody in this match really stood out except for just kind of starting to really enjoy Mark Davis more, but that's just from kind of just starting to see him more.
Yeah, if there was a standout, I would definitely say it's Mark Davis, and that carries over into Neon Wristlock. But I want to get into something about Fletcher and Davis. You had said something about, like, Davis kind of having this, he's better in a ring than Fletcher. He's more immediately easy to get in the ring, and Kyle Fletcher isn't as polished. Do you think Fletcher will catch up sooner rather than later in the ring, or will he find something else that works for him?
I think that there's some caveats to that. I think that Mark Davis stands out more in the ring because he has some really cool looking offensive moves. I don't know if I would necessarily put him super high above Fletcher in ring, honestly, because I think Fletcher fundamentally is better. I think Fletcher has a lot less cringe-inducing so there's some stuff that Davis does where the mechanics, the physics are off, the psychology is super off, to where I think Fletcher is a more believable worker, but in a place like Attack, I don't know that that stands out. I think that right now, with the GIF-centric wrestling with the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega being at the top of the game, that's why I think Mark Davis definitely stands out. But yeah. I think that Fletcher overall might have a better base to build off of. The problem with Fletcher, I think, though, is, I hate to say it, but his look. I think he looks great. But I think unlike a guy like Travis Banks, who is able to really capitalize on the I'm a wrestler gimmick, Fletcher doesn't have a look where I think that people are going to buy into him as a badass. So he's going to have to put together either maybe some high-flying offense or something. I don't know exactly, but I think he could easily catch up. I think he's just missing a really small piece to help him stand out above Mark Davis.
Yeah, that's fair. I was just wondering because I think Fletcher is a guy that has a lot of potential to be like a top-tier babyface. And I was wondering if you thought like maybe that could happen sooner than we think when it comes to Fletcher.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that there's more to see. I mean, me and you already are comparing them in some ways to Cena and Generico. And I think that that could even extend to that. I think Fletcher, natural babyface. Mark Davis, we haven't seen yet. The crowd's into him, but he may end up being the solid heel just like Kevin Steen was. So, I mean, we'll have to see where they go from that. I guess moving on from that, the next match is Banks versus Omori. For me, just more showing just how good Omori is for how young he is. Banks is definitely very good, but I love seeing Banks in these settings where he gets to play around. He's not as serious, showing off his fun side. So for me, this was a nice kind of second match on the card, but I mean, it never got too crazy. It's just a kind of a vet versus a student match. I think that there was some problems here in that Banks kind of I hate to say it, but he influenced the rookie with some of the more kind of issues with Banks. You know, his kind of go-go-go, spotty style, kind of going over the top, no selling, stuff like that. Really, for me, I think it's interesting because Omori has shown me to be a little bit more poised, a little bit more reserved, and possibly like a little bit better at letting stuff breathe. And Banks here, I think, at times kind of defaulted back to his status as trying to do as many spots as possible in the match.
What I took away from this is that I've seen Sarge Banks in Attack, and while I always really enjoyed it, I think the two shows in particular really stood out to me that I think Banks might be better at doing the anti-fun gimmick than Damian Dunn, whose whole act now is based on that character. And I'm not saying that Banks should be like leading the anti-fun police or something, but like when I see Banks in this setting and how radically different he is everywhere else, as opposed to being Terminator Travis and Fight Club Pro and Progress and Rev Pro, and then seeing him just goof it up here in Attack, I just find it more impressive than when Damian Dunn does it.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I guess the problem is it's just probably not as profitable, honestly, is what it comes down to, is that he's not going to make money, as much money playing this character in other places. But I don't know, because I also do really like Dunn in the character, so...
And Dunn's great at it. Don't get me wrong. I just think for some reason Travis being so serious and then him being able to go to Attack and do something like this, I think is like a real feather in his cap. Damian Dunn should run with this gimmick. He is great at it. But Travis doing so much other stuff in a much more serious role than coming and doing this is just a testament to his range.
Yeah, I could definitely see where you're coming from in that. What I like about Travis is that he, and I think it might be also part of what makes him stand out for you as well, is that he's being allowed to play the comedy up more. Mm-hmm. And so he's doing stuff like, what was it? He's messing up the slogan here. And he says, everybody have fun and stuff like that. And he's making like mistakes, and he's doing stuff that's fun and having the crowd chant, that was fun. And he's like hamming it up. While Dunn is, I think, trying to play it a little bit more straight at times without doing the... It's like he'll do self-deprecating humor, but less overt in the way that Travis does it. So I do think that makes Travis stand out in the character.
Oh, yeah. And then Damian, he does have moments where you can actually take him seriously, where he snaps and he beats somebody down in a real brutal manner. Like, as brutal as you'll get in Attack. So I think, from that standpoint, yeah, I see that Travis is a little bit more animated as opposed to Dunn, who is animated but tries to play it down the middle sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of more like the way Travis does it, it comes across more like he's in on the joke. And for me, Dunn, it feels more like he's making you feel like the joke's on him.
I get with Dunn that he believes that he is the anti-fun police.
Right. So, I mean, going out of that, we get into tag team match. This, for me, was probably the match of the night. It was CCK versus Extra Talented. They start out with some banter, talking about putting the titles on the line for Extra Talented. They talk about getting the CCK into the Mae Young Classic tournament, which I thought was great, especially if you if you know the history with these guys and Nixon Newell, who's now down in NXT. Unfortunately, she was not able to be in the NXT or in the Mae Young Classic because of her injury. So I thought that was funny. I wonder if Extra Talented even are aware of that fact, you know, to kind of reference that.
And then Aaron Solo being engaged to Bayley, so I was like, there's a lot of stuff to play off of there.
Yeah, so he even mentions his extra huggable fiance, soon to be wife. I thought that was great. And playing off of that. Then we get into the match, and I've really loved Extra Talented's UK tour. I don't know about you, but I thought that they've shown a lot of different sides. They very obviously got themselves booked already to come back because of how good they are. In Fight Club, they were in a three-way tag that involved the Hunter Brothers, and I think that... No, actually, I'm not sure who else was in there, unfortunately, right now, off the top of my head.
But might have been CCK or Wolfgang and BT Gunn.
Yeah, I think it was BT Dunn, actually, and Wolfgang. So that match, they were like just straight up, pretty much just trying to do like tough guy spots, having some cool, but just wrestling. They turn around here and they're playing pretty comedy, but being like kind of, you know, overt, over the top heels. Love Starks with the bare ass spot, just going insanely long. I mean, it was just too much with his ass hanging out there the whole time.
I've seen way too much of Ricky Starks' ass on this UK tour.
Yeah, and then, God, now I'm trying to think the OTT match that they had where they were, I think they were a lot more liked in OTT. And then the final match that we'll talk about on the next show as well with the Marauders, I think they just showed that they really can fit kind of every style. They can do pretty much anything they need, and they really, I think they knocked it out of the park during this UK tour for a team that I was already well aware of, thanks to my kind of co-host over on This Week in Wrestling, Pete, being from Texas and being such a fan of theirs. Quentin, how much had you followed them, and what did you think of this match particular and their showings overall in the UK?
I've actually seen, well, before the UK tour, I've seen way more Ricky Starks than I saw of Aaron Solo, because I think Starks had more stuff on YouTube. He was working Inspire, I think, more regularly than Solo was. So I was seeing more of them, and they're obviously wrestling on Wrestle Circus, which is not a promotion I like necessarily, but seeing them on the shows was always good because I like seeing these guys get bookings because they're very talented, as the name goes. But yeah, I thought on this tour they really made a name for themselves in a way that I don't think I was expecting, because other than working the FCP Attack family, they did get an OTT, and they did get Progress. And not just one Progress show. They're coming back to face DCK on another Progress show, I think, next month. So these two definitely started something real nice for themselves in the UK.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of kind of Jigsaw situation, where there are these American talents who are known, somewhat respected by guys like me and you, but not getting crazy bookings throughout the United States, but right, somehow over in, you know, in the European scene, they're really loving them. And it just, it harkens back to the early days. I've talked about it before, but wrestling now with the ability to watch everything online has kind of created like a new territorial system, but it's a worldwide territory where like, these are the guys who they, you know, they can't be big time stars in their home, but somehow in another country, they just click. And so for them, the UK is just like this, now this hotbed for them to get over, and the crowd's just super into them, which I think is fantastic. Coming out of that, we go into Wild Boar versus Elijah Dahl, two guys who I think are kind of criminally underappreciated, honestly, in general, especially Elijah Younger, making a name for himself here in Attack. He stands out as one of the more serious guys. My biggest issue with Elijah, his music. I don't like that he mashes up the intro from another song into a different song. To me, it throws off the whole vibe of everything, because the crescendo of the intro to the other song sets up to play into that song, and then when you cut it off, go to something else, it just, to me, it ruins the whole vibe. I get where he's coming from. He likes the, you know, that intro, but he wants a different song, whatever. But that's a stupid thing to pick apart. Boar has really come into his own recently. The ICP or ICW run with the Marauders has created something that's just like really over for this guy. He's invested in himself with the look, the mask, the contacts, everything's there wrestling wise. This was stiff, hard hitting strikes. This brought you back to reality after the opening three matches, having a lot of fun, a lot of joking, maybe some high spots, this and that. This felt like a fight. This felt real, and there was a lot of intensity here. What'd you make of this, Quinn?
Yeah, I think Elijah usually brings the intensity when he wrestles, which is definitely something you don't always get on Attack shows for how lighthearted they can be. And Wild Boar is someone that I always enjoy, whether it's in a singles capacity or teaming with Mike Bird. I think Boar always delivers. I made the joke that I think Elijah and Bad Bones could be the real Don't Talk to Me or My Son Ever Again tag team, because he really is just like a less bulky Bad Bones. It's not even like reaching for the comparison. From like the jeans to the tattoos to the bald head, he's just a skinny Bad Bones. So I'd really like to see that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Elijah's getting a chance to get his name out there somewhat. I mean, he's replacing Travis and the CCK team for King of Trios. Obviously still working Fight Club and Attack. I think he's just starting to get out more in Fight Club, so Hopefully he comes through, because he's a guy who I'm bullish on. I wouldn't necessarily say he's in my top tier of guys right now, but I think he's got something to prove. I think he's pretty good. From there, we go into the main event. I'm actually just going to let you talk about the main event first, because if I'm perfectly honest, I don't have much to say about it.
Well, I don't really have much to say about it either. It's just like, it's British Strong Style versus the Anti-Fun Police of Damian Dunn and Jim Obstruction and Lee Obstruction. And it's fine, but it's just, this match goes so long, and I'm fine with British Strong Style, but once you've seen so many of their trios matches, there's only so much you can care about them. So it's just, there's nothing a lot to say here. Like, there's Sledgehammer spots, there's Triple H tribute acts. I'll say I like Shea Purser, trying his best to impress Pete Dunne again, but that's about it. There's nothing really to say here. It just goes way too long.
That's it. That's where I'm at. Too long. I hate to say it, but it's a few shows in a row from Attack, including this one and the next one, where to me it feels like the main event is just, it's top heavy. It doesn't deliver after the card has been so breezy. And I don't want to put it on him, but it sucks for Damian Dunn, because he's kind of supposedly carrying the company. And I think if you watch him press start with kind of the goofiness of the main event being the swapped roles match. You got Travis Banks playing Mark Andrews to a T. You got FSU being the Anti-Fun Police. It's all that stuff was a lot of fun. And with Damian Dunn kind of doing a lot of the character work, it really helped add to the backbone of the show. But in these main event positions, being hamstrung, especially in this one, I can't blame him for this match not being good. He just isn't delivering as the top act in the company for me. And I really appreciated Eddie Dennis in that role, because Eddie Dennis always delivers, you know, what you expect from him, which is a good time. And after an Attack show, that can kind of be perfect, but he's not really doing that. And I understand why, because of his character, but it is making me go like, God, I really love this undercard. And then this main event just took too long and was boring. So that just kind of annoyed me a little bit. From there, we pop into the Neon Wrist Lock. This is at the Trinity Center. This is the bigger building that they run, or at least it looks bigger. The ring's out up against the wall. These are the shows. I don't dislike these shows, but I like the other building more. And this opens up. I won't even get into the match too much, but just my favorite spot of the first match is Mustache Mountain come out. They're supposed to be having their match with the Anti-Fun Police of Los Federales Santos Jr. and Sergeant Banks. They go directly to the bar with their music still playing. They go get drinks. They're talking to the crowd. And there's just one shot where the camera kind of zooms in on Tyler Bates' face as he's taking a drink. And he just kind of looks off into the middle distance. And he's got this look on his face like he's at a cookout. Like he's just at a backyard barbecue. And that he's not on his way to the ring for a wrestling match. And then you cut back to the Anti-Fun Police in the ring shouting and screaming, with Los Federales Santos Jr. just screaming his head off about no fun. Banks is trying to contain himself because he's laughing so hard. And in that moment, I was just dying, because that was just amazing. It killed me. That second in the intro, that it just, these guys are just there to have fun. They're shaking all the hands. They're getting drinks. And the Anti-Fun Police are going ballistic in the ring. From there, getting into the match, obviously good stuff. Lots of good workers here. Mustache Mountain is, I think, much better as a tag team without Pete Dunne, which seems crazy because they're all so good. But they do a lot less of the bullshit. There is some Triple H mocking spots, but this does get going at different points, and there's some great action. Bate actually wrestling with Santos is really fun to watch, because Santos kind of ups his game against Bate, doing more athletic spots than he normally does. It's kind of a big, out-of-shape guy, so for me, this was a really fun match to watch. What did you think about everything I just kind of laid down there, Quentin?
Yeah, what's funny is that I always enjoy Mustache Mountain whenever they get to show up, because with the whole British Strong Style thing, they might go under that instead of being the Mustache Mountain we've known for a few years now. So I always like seeing them. And I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were never like a big Trent Seven fan as a babyface, right?
No, I was not, but I do like him in this setting now, right now, right, with Bate and like this. But no, I think he's much better as a heel, honestly.
Yeah, I think he's gotten better as a babyface. I like the tag team a lot, so them being their usual handshaking, posing selves in Travis Banks and Los Federales Santos losing their minds, I think is fantastic. I think it's Trent Seven, actually, who does a dive. And Travis Banks' face is the best thing because he is so over the top, just like moving his mouth in all kind of awkward directions and places. He has great facial expressions. Like, for how serious he can be, when he just wants to make a fool out of himself with his facial expressions, he's fantastic at it. So I had a lot of fun watching this.
Yeah, if you go on, this is for everyone, not just you, but if you go on Twitter, I think it was Dan Gonzalo or Gonzala, whatever it is, I don't know how to say it, but Dan, if you know about British wrestling, you know who I'm talking about. He was posting a Faces of Travis Banks thread on Twitter, and then Banks came in with these just composite shots. Each one is like 9 different pictures of him making a stupid face, and he's posting all of them himself. Then finally, what's her name? Kai, I forget her name now, but she used to be Evie. She comes in with a picture of Travis from when he was like 19, flexing on the camera, and it's just amazing stuff. So the guy, I mean, you talked about Terminator Banks. He can turn it on and be super serious, but in real life, he's just seems to be a very lighthearted, funny guy who doesn't mind kind of letting himself be the butt of the joke, which is great.
Yeah, even going back to like his interview with Flash Morgan Webster on Wrestling Friends, the guy's like cracking up the whole time telling his story. Like, from wrestling, it's like in that small little shed in New Zealand. Like, he's cracking up about it the whole time. And it's not like it's necessarily funny material, but he's just dying of laughter the whole time. It's really, right. It's really cool with him.
Yeah, exactly. So from there, we go into a 6-way. Ryan Smile gets the win. Chet Sterling, Elijah Dahl, Chet Sterling. Was it? Or Charlie Sterling, sorry.
I didn't know Chet Sterling migrated to the UK.
Hey, I wouldn't mind it. And then we get Mike Drewsome, Drew Parker, EC Drew, and Omori here. I thought Sterling looked good with some spots here and there. Elijah, I mean, this is kind of an attack staple. Just kind of throw a bunch of guys in a match. I liked the Mike Awesome shtick. I thought that it was fun. Omori was fine. But, I mean, realistically, this is, you know, spot festy match. Obviously, Ryan Smile gets the win because he's probably the only guy in the match who cared about winning. And then they just kind of move on from there. I don't know. Was there any too much to you from this match in general?
I think the biggest takeaway was the post-match when Drew just kind of like realized what was going on and he snapped out of the ECW thing and everyone is telling him to calm down and he's freaking out. So I'm wondering if that's going to go anywhere.
Yeah, he was playing up the angle on his Twitter about that he's sick and tired of the attack fans and this and that. So we'll see where it goes. That'll be interesting to see.
Because, like, people will know him mainly from Attack, but he does other wrestling. And from what I've seen on his Twitter, he does, like, hardcore wrestling, too. I think his Twitter header is him with thumbtacks in his back. So maybe we'll be getting the more serious Drew Parker in Attack going forward. Who knows? But I thought the angle was really interesting.
Yeah, and he seems to have, like, a kind of a little back-and-forth feud going on with Omori in Lucha Forever, and he's a lot more serious there. So yeah, we'll see where he goes. I could definitely see him maybe filling in on the heel side of things, especially because, I hate to say it, but again, I think that the Anti-Fun Police stuff is kind of worn out its welcome. It was a lot of fun on the undercard, but then now it being the main event and having multiple segments on every show, I think it is kind of getting overexposed.
And then CCK branching out in other places, so they're naturally just going to get bigger bigger reactions and more cheers, even if they're playing heels. So you do need another strong heel to come in there, because Pete Dunne isn't a heel necessarily. The Anti-Fun Police are not as serious as you would want, I guess, in a top heel act. CCK is getting bigger and bigger. So I think Drew might be on his way to becoming a bigger name in Attack. Well, not bigger name, but a more prominent role.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more serious. Speaking of, the man Pete Dunne comes in the company that he founded with his buddy Mandrews. He had a long stint where he wasn't allowed to wrestle, and he's taken over the 24/7 title, which was for a long time the joke belt of the company. It's Attack, so everything's kind of a joke, but this was like the joke of joke belts. A fan won it, Shea Purser won it. It's in the same vein as kind of the DDT Iron Man heavy metal weight title where everyone can get it. Even Joey Ryan's dick has been champion. And so now he's kind of weirdly rehabilitating this title, and he does a crazy good job of that here as we have a debuting, I think it was a surprise debut, of Will Ospreay. So on this random attack show in the middle of the card, for the joke title, they have Pete Dunne versus Will Ospreay, two guys who are arguably, I'll say, very easily top 25 workers on the planet to most people, or have this amazing barn burner of a match that's just as good as anything you could expect in New Japan or NXT or the UK tournament or wherever. These guys are so great together. It's funny that, you know, like you talked about, this is Ospreay's debut in Attack. I mean, he just made his debut in Fight Club Pro recently. The guy just, he didn't work a lot of places outside of Progress early on.
And he's debuting in MCW in Melbourne soon, too.
Yeah, so he's just finally starting to get out there a little bit more.
I think because he has more friends in these places now, obviously with the South Pacific Power Couple being back in Australia or New Zealand, like, Ospreay was like, all right, I guess I can go over there and visit. And because B, his girlfriend, I believe, is from New Zealand.
She's from England but grew up in New Zealand.
Yeah, so I can see why Ospreay is branching out a little bit more there. And I think he's gotten more acquainted with the Midlands group of guys. So I think that explains why he's branching out a little bit more. But I'm glad he is, because I think this provides him with some real fresh matchups. Because for a while there, people were getting sick and tired of Ospreay, saying he was stale and that he wasn't doing much. And now I think, even if it's just a slight change and just working in a different part of the country, I think it's given Ospreay a little bit more life.
Yeah, this match included. I loved his matches in Fight Club. He looked like a new man. He was super into it, happy. Same thing here. He's really into the match and working super hard. And
I think that's notable, is that Ospreay looks genuinely happy when he's working these matches. Like, it doesn't come across as fake to me. It doesn't come across as, like, faux passion. Ospreay seems genuinely happy to be able to work these places where people are going to give him an honest chance and not just, like, shit on him because they've seen him so many times.
Right, and it almost, this is a weird thing to say, but does Ospreay, in some ways, I mean, this company can be likened to DDT. To me, do you think Ospreay comes across a little bit like a Kota Ibushi type? He signed this New Japan contract, he's kind of was dazzled by the stars in his eyes, and he was just moving forward on this train that's supposed to say, this is how you become a big star, and now he's kind of disillusioned with it and realizing he has a lot more fun getting to do what he wants and just wrestling around with his mates, and doesn't really care as much about the stardom.
Yeah, and like, keep in mind, he started as a backyarder too, so like, wrestling these kind of shows are like part of what made him who he is. So I can see why Ospreay enjoys himself so much when he's allowed to let loose and not be so strict and be able to, I guess, express himself more. It's not like in New Japan he's not allowed to do his moves or whatever, but there's an expectation of Will Ospreay. There's an expectation of most of those guys there who aren't Toru Yano to have some level of seriousness to them. So I think he enjoys that aspect of just being able to have some fun once in a while.
Yeah, and I think he's really good in these settings, honestly. I loved this match. This was probably one of my favorite Ospreay matches from this entire year. I don't know where you come down on the match itself.
Oh yeah, I definitely love this match a lot. I haven't loved the other Will Ospreay Pete Dunne matches when they've happened. They've been very good, but I always thought they had better in them. And now that Pete has gotten better, and now that Will, I've been saying all year that Ospreay has toned down his act, and that people were cut, and that the people that were turned off by him last year should give his 2017 work a chance. And I think this is an example of Ospreay. He does his spots, yeah, but he's not as crazy as you would think. It's really just a real solid wrestling match. Like, there's not a lot to put to it. There's stuff with Shay. There's some kind of antics because it's Attack, but it's really like the most straightforward match you could get out of these two, especially in the setting they're in.
Yeah, no, exactly. From there, we go into what I think for a lot of people coming out was the biggest kind of thing from the weekend, or I guess not from the weekend, but from this kind of grouping of shows in Attack in general. We got Kyle Fletcher, Mark Davis. They go up against CCK, Chris Brooks, and Kid Lycus. And they get the win, a relatively new tag team, relatively new guys to attack. I think, God, it might be only their second or third match as a tag team in attack, and they win the tag titles here, which in attack, they really do treat the tag titles sometimes like they're the main title of the company. The match itself, I mean, it fit exactly the mold of what you expect from these guys. Lots of spots, lots of sick fucking tag moves. Cool. There's some good storytelling. Fletcher can sell his ass off, gets a good sympathy from the crowd. Mark Davis is the power guy.
Mark Davis comes in and cleans house. I thought Mark Davis coming in and getting the hot tag was great.
Yeah, his hot tag is fantastic. My biggest complaint, as I saw him do it three times in a row over the course of all these shows, is the one-arm powerbomb by Mark Davis. Very impressive, but he always sets it up holding the person's partner's foot. He just kind of drops it, and they instantly bend down. The second he lets go of their foot, it doesn't come across realistic to me at all. And he powerbombs him on the back. The spot itself is impressive as hell, though. So if he could just figure out a way to set it up better, I think it could be a definite really cool move and stand out for a lot of people. I in no way believed or thought that they were going to win the titles here. CCK, as you talked about, are such a hot act. They're so over everywhere. It wouldn't make sense for this company that's really the company that they made their name in a lot of ways. I mean, it's the company
This is the company where CCK was made. Obviously, the Brooks and Gresham incarnation started in WXW and when Gresham was still in the UK, but as far as like Kid Lyko's turning heel and the whole CCK act as we know it now, that didn't start until late 2015, I would say.
Yeah, and it was kind of the cap off of the feud with just Chris Brooks and Nixon Newell. And Lycus comes in to help Chris Brooks essentially win the feud, and then that branched off into a tag team feud that has some amazing matches as well, and really was what catapulted, I would say, Chris Brooks and Lycus into the echelon of where they are. I think it did. I wouldn't say it was everything for Nixon, because she was having great singles matches against other girls in a lot of other promotions. Specifically, I think you could say SWE is kind of where she made her name. Singles wrestling, then she gets over. I think she had some matches in ICW and OTT, but realistically...
And Fight Club Pro getting singles matches.
Yeah, but I think, you know, that tag feud with CCK really helped as well to establish her, but it really helped to build CCK up, and they are becoming bigger and bigger, so you figure, why is this company going to take the belts off of them for these unknowns? But it just goes to show what attack's all about. These guys are hot. They've got good look. They're coming from a region that's buzzy. They're... You know, they want to show we've got commitment to them, and it almost feels like the opposite of what Progress did. I mean, Progress had this super hot tag team of I guess, New Zealanders, Australian, or by way of Australia, and they waited so long that they never got a chance to put the tag titles on them. Meanwhile, Attack does it here in their second or third match, and the company gets the huge pop, and then now we get to kind of watch the story unfold from here. I mean, okay, anything from the match itself that I missed that you want to talk about?
I really love the fact that we made the Steen Erico comparison earlier, but I think the finish that Fletcher and Davis did with, I think Fletcher might have did some kind of brainbuster or pile driver, and that went into Davis doing his awful waffle, which is like ridiculous.
It was very Steen Erico when it would be the package pile driver where he then rolls him into a brainbuster. It was Davis did a pop-up pile driver where he was holding Lycos by the legs
on the mat. You've seen Hero do it before.
Yeah, and just kind of boom, pop, bam. Then he rolled him back into the brainbuster that then Fletcher picked him back up for the awful waffle. And yeah, it really did feel like Steen Erico kind of set up. Their dynamic is almost... exactly like Steen Erico. They just need to get polished. I think that they really are. That's a good team for them to say that they're modeled after.
And Lycos did a ridiculous looking pop up Canadian Destroyer. And after Davis hit him with a pop up powerbomb earlier, Lycos countered that into a Canadian Destroyer. We don't have that much time, but Lycos is so good, and I can't wait until we have another time to talk about him, because
that guy's
going to be one of the best wrestlers in the world.
No, like, I know. And it sucked, because I think this match, it was perfect, but over the course of the three shows in a row that I watched, it was like a six-way with Lycos, or it was a four-way with Lycos, and it was a the tag match with Extra Talented, they every time they kind of Chris Brooks does a tilt-a-whirl, pops Lycus off, and then the other person bases for him to do the satellite tornado DDT, and it kept getting botched. And every time I was like, that botch was not his fault. Here, when he's got a base like Mark Davis, who's already really shown his power and ability to base super well.
That spot goes perfectly.
It goes off without a hitch because Lycus body control twisting is not the issue. It's the base catching him properly and kind of taking him through it. Because, yeah, Lycus, I mean, that's his main thing is he might be smaller than a lot of guys, but his body control, his twists, his flips, the way that he moves in that ring, his striking is just nasty. I mean, he gets into a strike-off on the Good Wrestling Show. I shouldn't even be wasting time talking about this. That just looks fucking beautiful. I definitely, me and you are both big fans of Lycus, so it'll be good if we get a chance somewhere down the line when we have more time to talk about him. Coming out of that, we get the match I talked about earlier, the Marauders versus Extra Talented. Again, I think that this was more straight up just Smash Mouth Wrestling. Extra Talented showed that they were game to keep up with what I think is the kind of the preeminent kind of tough guy tag team outside of Progress. Where you don't have the London Riots, you kind of have SDS missing in action due to Tommy End, I guess, having some dark days in NXT. And you turn around and these guys kind of fill that role. And Extra Talented, after kind of playing jokey stuff with CCK on the show before, they turn around and show that they can easily stand toe-to-toe with big, hard-hitting badasses. I enjoyed this match quite a bit. And again, definitely showed that Extra Talented was game. Kind of what are your thoughts here, Quentin?
Yeah, I thought this was really good too. I love Mike Bird, so anytime I get to see him, I'm gonna eat it up. And the Marauders are, I kind of wish they'd bring the Marauders into Progress, because the Progress tag division, I'm not saying it's weak, because when you have Mustache Mountain and CCK and War Machine and the London Riots and other teams you can plug in and out, it's not weak. But if you want to bring in another somewhat local team, like, I really think you should bring in the Marauders, because Boar and Bird, I think, would fit right in. And since you already introduced Bird to the audience, I think might as well bring in Boar, too.
Yeah, and I mean, Boar has been in Progress before, early on. Bird just recently came in. I think, you know, Boar had his issues at the time that he was in Progress. That wasn't necessarily a company for a guy like him. He's also come together in a way that works really well. And as you talk about, I mean, Progress wants to be seen as the top kind of promotion in the UK. And, you know, some people see them neck and neck with RPW based on distribution and popularity. But, I mean, to me, the Attack tag team division has always smoked them. They don't have anywhere near the same depth in the tag team division. So they really would do well to just kind of copy Attack and go with what they're doing. Going into the main event, again, I don't have much to say. Honestly, I didn't think that this match delivered. I'm not a big fan of Morgan Webster in general. I think that Deputy Dunn, while I love him, I don't necessarily know if he's able to work a main event style match that really works in 2017 super well for me. So again, coming out of it, I'm kind of, oh, I really loved the show until the main event, and then it kind of disappointed. What do you think? What do you think about that assessment?
Yeah, right there with you. I like Flash as a person. I like the Wrestling Friends podcast a lot, but ever since he came back, Flash just does nothing for me in the ring. The most I've enjoyed Flash since he's came back is that match with Nathan Cruz at Chapter 45.
Yeah.
And everywhere else, it hasn't done it for me.
That was it. That match really worked, and I was excited for him to go forward. I thought that match and the match with Bird in Progress was pretty good as well.
Yeah.
But didn't tick the same boxes as the Cruz match, and I think part of it is that he doesn't have good heels to go up against who are just straight up heels. And I think that's why the Cruz match works so well, is that for me, Morgan Webster needs to be very strongly the babyface in the match. And otherwise, he gets outshined, I think. I hate to say it, because like you said, I love the podcast. I think he's a great guy, but I don't think has a strong enough kind of babyface it factor to get over against someone who's not a real strong heel.
Yeah, he doesn't really have a strong presence, which is weird to say when, like, you see the kind of gear that Flash comes out in. He obviously puts a lot of thought into his presentation, but I just don't think he really brings that much much of a presence or aura to his matches where I'm reeled in or I want to cheer for him, as opposed to like something that like Mark Andrews or Travis Banks or even Eddie Dennis has, or Mark Haskins. Like, Flash is just missing that component.
He really is. I hate to say that too, because I really like the guy, but I want to like his stuff, and I just don't get into it. All right, well, coming out of it, like I said, two great shows, lots of fantastic tag team wrestling. Again, like, that's what Attack's kind of claim to fame is their tag division is super strong. Every show they always have at least one or two tag team matches. I mean, the second show had three tag team matches, which is not kind of normal in a lot of American wrestling, American indies. Lots of fun, but the main events, I mean, I hate to say it, but are slightly skippable. What do you think? Overall thoughts, Quentin?
Yeah, really fun shows. I echo the sentiment that you don't need to watch these main events. Like, they don't deliver. Damian Dunn and the Anti-Fun Police is just not working there, and I'm not going to put the blame solely on him. British Strong Style don't bring their A-game in that six-man tag either. And Flash Morgan Webster isn't particularly compelling in the Neon Wristlock main event, but you could just watch everything before the main event on those shows and get your money's worth.
Yeah, that's it. All right, Quentin, anything you need to plug before we get out of here?
You can follow me on Twitter at QT_Moody, and that's about it right now.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter also at Lucha Undead. And I hope you guys enjoyed. This is actually, because we're reviewing the two shows, we'll say that this is a double podcast.
I think that works.